Welcome to NeuroNoodles, Neurofeedback and Neuropsychology Podcast, featuring tech legend Jay Gunkelman. He is the man who has read over 500,000 brain scans. Our goal is to provide information and promote options for better mental health.
The NeuroNoodle Podcast is supported by listeners and businesses just like you. Like our gold supporter, Applied Neuroscience, and our silver supporter, Mind Media. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neuroscience's NeuroGuide workshops in Madeira Beach, Florida. They're led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Earn up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Mind Media. Get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from mindmedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor caps is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit mindmedia.com now.
When you go to Google and type in climate change is, you're going to see different results depending on where you live and the particular things that Google knows about your interests.
That's not by accident. That's a design technique.
What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
I was the co-inventor of the Facebook like button.
I was the president of Pinterest.
Google. Twitter. Instagram.
There were meaningful changes happening around the world because of these platforms. I think we were naive about the flip side of that coin.
We get rewarded by hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth.
A whole generation is more anxious, more depressed.
I always felt like fundamentally it was a force for good. I don't know if I feel that way anymore.
Facebook discovered that they were able to affect real world behavior and emotions without ever triggering the user's awareness. They are completely clueless.
Fake news spreads 6 times faster than true news.
We're being bombarded with rumors.
If everyone's entitled to their own facts, there's really no need for people to come together. In fact, there's really no need for people to interact.
We have less control over who we are and what we really believe.
If you want to control the population of your country, there has never been a tool as effective as Facebook.
We built these things and we have a responsibility to change it.
The intention could be, how do we make the world better?
If technology creates mass chaos, loneliness, more polarization, more election hacking, more inability to focus on the real issues, we're toast.
This is checkmate on humanity.
So, Jay, what'd you think of Social Dilemma, man?
Well, you know, you can expect business that handles the internet communications between people to harvest data. Yeah. And that's going to happen. They're in business for business. They're not in it as a service.
Yeah.
You know, that out of the goodness of their heart, they're in it to make money. And as they harvest information, they can sell that information to help target marketing. And, you know, there's all sorts of uses for information. But they can also drive their readership or viewership up with controversy. And as easily pointed out, it polarizes the general audience. And as good as that is for their business, gee-many, it really wreaks havoc on society. They have giant energetic polar opposite groups.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's being driven. But, you know, that wouldn't happen if we didn't have the propensity for it wired into us. And I think that's the only part of this that I'm even halfway qualified to even think about, much less speak about.
Right, right.
You know, all of that, what they're doing with their algorithms and everything, yeah, like that, there are experts that could talk about that. But ultimately, the negativity bias, yeah, and positivity bias are things that end up guiding that polarization. You know, if you're sitting there relaxed, chilled out,
yeah,
making all sorts of alpha,
yeah,
and something catches your attention, you go from the default mode, resting state network in your brain where alpha is happening, posterior cingulate, temporoparietal junctions, and the anterior cingulate, that resting state alpha pattern, the salience network, when something catches your attention, is the anterior cingulate and both insula, anterior insula. Well, that's going to hijack your resting state and flip you automatically into an executive mode, and the executive network is going to have to figure out, what was it that caught my attention? Is it important? Is that a snake? Oh, it's just a rope. I can chill out again, you know. But if it's something salient that you have to activate. Now, the network to activate us is a well-honed, built-in fire alarm. Mount up everything you've got. Let's go. Fight, flight. All built into that. The opposite of that, the wind down, everything's okay. It takes a while to, you know, look around and make sure it's just a rope. I mean, that there's a slower wind down. And I can understand why that might have been historically, you know, in ancient cave times, a valid thing. You've got to be more, you know, if you're going to live, you've got to be able to be activated quickly. Fight, flight, you know, happens real quick. But it should take a little while for you to wind down because, you know, it's a difficult world out there when you're a caveman or a cavewoman. I think that basic thing ends up being the bias of your frontal lobe and limbic system. The limbic system has a gating, a stop system built into it. Your right amygdala and right anterior insula and the operculum, the covering over the insula of the lateral frontal area, are activated when you need to inhibit or stop. And believe me, if you don't have a good stop built in, something's going to get you if you're just wandering across the playa, in old days. You had to be cautious and have a good reaction to not step into something. So that's really wired in. And if that network kicks in, that's your salience network. Again, all of that on the side, but it could kick the rest of the salience network in as well. So the anterior cingulate, anterior insula, again, working in conjunction with the limbic amygdalae on both sides. And if you look at the person's frontal lobe with the EEG, which is really now I can start talking about something I know something about,
right?
You can actually measure the dominance of the right versus left and midline structures. And it's not just alpha. I mean, there's an unfortunately kind of simplistic, dumbed down idea of depression is left frontal alpha. And if you find left frontal alpha, you probably have somebody with a mood regulation problem, and they probably have a depression. But if you look at the iSpot-D study, 3,000 plus people, this study did not find in the group average a left frontal alpha pattern. Now, there was a smaller subset that had a left frontal alpha pattern, but this did not characterize all of depression. But, you know, depression is a DSM cluster. And, you know, the DSM is a cluster unto itself. I'll leave the kind of cluster alone, you know.
You say.
But, yeah, we're a family show. Yeah. So we basically need to look not just at alpha and the alpha balance frontally, although that is an important aspect of it. You have to look at fast activity as well. More beta on the right gives you the same imbalance on dominance as more alpha on the left. Alpha is a resting rhythm, beta is an activity. So, you know, either one of them present and a little of both can give you, I mean, it's not a much alpha on the left, it's not much beta on the right. But if that pattern happens, you've got a significant imbalance in dominance. And dominance gives you approach avoidance, you know, and that left frontal subdominance with alpha or right frontal beta. You're going to have a difficulty with approach. It's a depressive pattern, and going out and doing and engaging is not really the thing you're wired for at that point. On the other hand, if you have alpha on the right, that's commonly in the people who think it's just alpha. Alpha on the right, this is going to be agitated depression or anxiety. And depression is one thing, but now you've got boohoo sad, depressed on one side and agitated depressed on the other side. So, you know, that kind of explains somewhat on the iSpot-D study looking at depression and not seeing it as one thing, because there's different kinds of depression. So you've got to look at alpha and beta. Actually, there's a very fancy calculation for the point of entropy calculation. That calculation was originally presented in a publication by Jordan Popjordanov. He's the head of the Academy of Science and Arts in Macedonia. He used to be the head of quantum physics for Soviet Union, but when that all kind of came apart, he's in Macedonia. And I learned a fair amount about quantum effects in EEG from him. He's a brilliant guy and very, very, very kind and a generous fellow. He actually did the greenhouse gas offset efficiency calculations for the UN. He's a good scientist. And the Macedonian Academy of Arts and Sciences is absolutely beautiful. What a facility. It's spectacular. But he provided the calculation. It's a very complex calculation, but it gives you this point of entropy balance issue. And it's kind of like a critical mass calculation or a boiling point calculation. There's a point at which things change, and that calculation is important. And it's not just alpha, it's also fast activity that goes into that calculation. So we basically end up having balance right left being a big issue, but at the midline, you've deep down in the midline, you've got the cingulate, and the cingulate is wired into the limbic system, and it's wired into the thalamocortical system. It's a complex crossroads there that gives you cognitive and emotional flexibility. So obsessive compulsive traits or oppositional defiant traits, if your flexibility is locked on, you're obsessed, you have a compulsion. But if you're locked off, Now you have amotivation, lack of initiation, anhedonia, which is a form of depression. You know, one of the things in depression is basically not having any joy you dumped your dopamine somehow and it's all the joy is gone, you know. So what we need to do basically is look at the EEG to see what the frontal lobe is doing and what the anterior midline is doing. And you don't want to ignore the rest of the brain because your mood state can be disturbed by discharges happening as well. People with gigantic amounts of beta frontally, Fred Gibbs and Erna Gibbs discovered beta in the early 30s, wrote about it, gigantic beta spindles being seen in epilepsy, but they're also seen in non-epileptics, so they're a non-specific pattern, but gigantic beta spindles are seen in bipolar disorder. And you could be a bipolar too and look depressed. So, lots of beta on the right that makes you look depressed. Depression is not a single thing. Frontal balance has a great deal to do with the negativity bias or positivity bias, the manic state, the approach state, with the right frontal subdominance. You can turn somebody into somebody who's got an excessive approach by activating that right frontal area.
So, Jay, they talk about turning off the notifications because that's the pull of the slot machine. is that a form of neural feedback, isn't it? You know, the
intermittent positive reinforcement is very hard to extinguish. If you happen to hit a nice win early on in your pulling the lever career, and your limbic system reward system is tweaked just right, you probably have a gambling addiction. You know, people that have that anterior cingulate can be locked on, that obsessive compulsive drive. One third of addiction is the cingulate. You can't, you know, if it's a drug addiction, let's say you get the person clean and sober and absolutely they never ever touch alcohol again or drugs again. Well, if it's an anterior cingulate addiction towards drugs, okay, I won't take drugs anymore, but I'm a very flexible thing. I can lock onto any old thing. I'm going to be a gambler. I'm going to have a sex addiction. I'm going to have an internet addiction. I will find something to be addicted to. The anterior cingulate is incredibly clever and flexible on what it can do. And I have to say, there's a form of bipolar disorder that's discussed nowadays. It's a fairly new arrival in the diagnostic world. Rapid cycling bipolar. I have never seen a rapid cycling bipolar look like an actual bipolar EEG pattern. I have seen what looks like an obsessive compulsive drive and a depressive pattern. And if you have the obsession, you look manic briefly. Your obsessive compulsive drive makes you look manic briefly. As soon as you unlock from whatever it is you're locked onto, you lapse back into the depression. So you rapidly cycle back and forth. The actual bipolar has a longer recovery time. Depending upon how high you flew, you're going to end up crashing deeper. And it takes quite a long time to recover sometimes.
And let's talk about age, because they make a suggestion in there, stay off of social media till you're 16 or something.
Hey, are you picking on me about age?
You and me both.
Well, I got you beat.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things to unpack here. I mean, because there was like a family, it was a documentary, and they were going back to this family. The mother tried to get everybody to get off of their digital devices by putting them in a little safe. The preteen or teen was so addicted she had to smash the thing open. Then she gets the phone, and then somebody makes fun of her ears and comparing herself against Instagram. There's so many things to go into. But how does age come into play? You know, parents are listening. What's going on in their brain? Because it's not developed yet, especially the executive part, right? So what's happening, and what can parents do to, should they put their phones in a safe or limit screen time, do you think?
Well, I think there has to be a balance to the kid's life. You can't just be online. The amount of activity, not the activity of you know, thumbing, yeah. but actual up and around and active, some sports or some just general exercise of some sort. All that life balance has to happen. Otherwise, your future is impaired. If you sit like a lump and work online, your lump status is going to be very short lived. You've got to have a balance. So as a kid, it's hard for them to pick a life balance. A parent has to do some parenting and establish some sort of a balance. And if the kid has an internet addiction, it may be the anterior cingulate. If you, let's put ourselves into the mindset of a kid who has obsessive focus on something, whatever it is. It might not be internet. It could be whatever. They're focused on it and they're motivated. That is their perfect motivation. And you have to imagine your limbic system. You don't have a cortical development fully yet. And the limbic system is primal. It's pure primal. And you're coming over and telling little Johnny or little Susie, you know, please leave whatever you're doing alone and go over with the other children over here and do the thing everybody is doing. Well, the brain of little Johnny or Susie doesn't understand the adult, quit that and go do that. It perceives that you're trying to change its motivation and knock it off its motivated focus. And that's a threat to its existence. So how intense would your reaction be if somebody threatened your existence? Okay, well, little Johnny's snit over not being able to use the game on the computer or the chat group or whatever. If it looks like he's reacting excessively, it's little Johnny or little Susie's limbic system that you're speaking to. It doesn't understand the word no. There isn't any no in limbic system, which is why in hypnosis, the suggestions have to be phrased positively. Otherwise, you know, you get exactly what you didn't want. Yeah. So, oopsie. But the limbic system doesn't understand no. So you can't be knowing little Johnny or little Susie. It's better to dangle something shiny to catch their attention, to change their motivation, than it is to try to force them away from whatever it is that they're focused on. Their ability to hyper-focus may be something that's useful later in life. You don't want to totally extinguish it, but you need to learn how to operate it. If you can put a saddle on the horse of OCD, it would win the freaking race. So, you know, that you have to learn how to manage that. And again, you don't want to try to force them away from their focus and their motivation. Something shiny over here will catch their attention and change their motivation. So incentivizing with whatever incentivizes the kid. Now, it might be something shiny and dangly for me because I like shiny, dangly things, you know. Right. But for them, it might be financial. It might be, who knows, whatever motivates them is what you can dangle. You can't dangle something that's not motivating. So, you know, figure out what bribery you're going to need to do to manipulate that cingulate. But it's possible. And again, forcing little Johnny or little Susie off of their motivation, you're going to get the nuclear option. Kaboom.
Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neurosciences NeuroGuide workshops. In Madeira Beach, Florida, they're led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Earn up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops.
Mutual assured destruction. And the wild response that's out of control is again a limbic response, and it's an awful thing to see. But parents need to understand what they're dealing with, and if their kid has a cingulate issue, they've got a cingulate issue. Now, it's also possible to deal with a cingulate issue with neurofeedback or neuromodulation. You can actually do DC stim and activate or inactivate it with an electrode sitting above it, but you have to have a higher density set of reference points to get the current to go deep. You can do it with TMS. They have anterior cingulate coils that can do TMS at the anterior cingulate, and higher frequencies activate and lower frequencies inactivate. And you have to look at what's going on in the anterior cingulate before you just do TMS. If it's theta and alpha, you have to activate it. If it's beta spindles in the anterior cingulate, you have to inhibit it. So you've got to look before you leap with the therapy and treat it appropriately, custom to the individual. Personalized medicine, when it comes to brainwaves, it has to be personalized. So TMS can target it. Neurofeedback can target it. It was shown that Loretta can define the anterior cingulate, and you can actually feed back the activity in the anterior cingulate and focus on it. Now, you can do it with an electrode on the surface as well, because the anterior cingulate is easily picked up on the surface. So you don't have to do a complex, you know, whole cap to do Loretta to find the cingulate. You can stick an electrode on the right spot, a couple of reference points, and you're up and running. So even a one-channel simple machine can actually train the anterior cingulate. But if you want to go high-tech and fancy and expensive, you can use a full cap and, you know, software to define the region of interest, the voxels of the anterior cingulate that you're interested in working with. So there's a lot of ways to actually intervene if the child has an anterior cingulate that's difficult to operate. And but, you know, negativity bias, positivity bias, the frontal balance, the various forms of mood regulatory patterns that you can see up front, the importance of the networks that are underlying all of this, and obviously the critical importance of the anterior cingulate. So, you know, there's a lot of neuroscience that kind of underlies the general discussion of you know, internet and the services and how they're harvesting the data and what they're doing with it and how we're reacting to it. And given my neuroscience background, you can see what I see when I'm looking around. You know, I see neuroscience and neuropathology and neurooptimal folks, you know, the optimized function and whatnot. It's a it's a an odd way to perceive. And sometimes that's been awkward. I have a dear friend who's passed, Anna Weiss. And Anna was a brilliant, insightful person who did guided meditations using the mind mirror EEG device, worked with Max Cade in England, came over and studied a little bit at Stanford, caught on the concept of state and content from Prebrum, and was doing fabulous work, wrote a few books on peak performance, mind or brain. But seeing neurology, neuroscience around me, I told Anna, she was only a few blocks away from where my office was in Marin at that point, and we'd catch lunch together. Well, you're walking, and when she was walking, she had what's called clown's feet. The clown has a giant shoe, and the heel hits, and the toes flop down. So it's flop, 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 flop. Clown's feet walking, and her gait was spread a little wider. So, you know, that means there's a peripheral neuropathy. And there's, you know, neuropathies, something wrong with the nervous system. There's only a few things that give you clown's feet and spread gait. One of them is chronic alcoholism, where you've destroyed your peripheral nervous system. And it can be that. That's not an uncommon form of that. But I knew Anna. She's not, you know, a souse. She's not drinking to excess every day or nothing like that. So the other options are demyelinating disorders. And those aren't good things at all. So I told her I thought she needed to go to a neurologist. I thought she might have the beginnings of MS, multiple sclerosis. And it took them 5 years before they could see it on the MRI. I've learned to kind of shut up about what I see. She could have had 5 years of blissful ignorance as until it was more easily diagnosed. And she had a form that took her really quite quickly after that point of the formal diagnosis. Oh, well.
It's rough, Jay. Jay, positive intermittent reinforcement. They brought that up in the documentary. And getting back to the slot machine, is it? They referenced the Stanford persuasive tech lab. They're trying to motivate people to act in a certain way. Is there a way you can combat that with neurofeedback to because they're influencing you one way, call it neurofeedback, whatever it is, you're even if it's 1%, yeah, they're changing what you do.
They're just trying to control your reinforcements. And you've got little strings coming up out of you, and you've got some puppeteering. If they can control your motivations and reinforcement, they've got some ability to manipulate you. If you realize the manipulation, if you understand what's happening, you can snip the little wires and controls. It's happened near here. There's a small town of Benicia, and there's a refinery in the town, Valero. And there's an election coming up, and Valero wants a candidate for mayor and a candidate on the city council that are going to be supportive of their business operation and not get in their way. So they pump hundreds of thousands of dollars into a PAC that supports a candidate that they want to support. As soon as the community realized what was happening, the jig was up. the last two elections in a row, it didn't matter that they pumped $250,000 into a small town and, you know, saturated it with ads, attack ads, slanderous attack ads on the people that are actually good local people. You know, the manipulation of all of that information, false information though it may have been, as soon as the people realize that this is just us being manipulated, snip, snip, there went the control. And they voted them out two elections in a row. And, you know, you can dump $250,000 or $500,000 into a little tiny town and absolutely control the media. And as a candidate, you're getting like the big donations of maybe $200 or $500 or something from locals. Maybe some businesses that give you your campaign maximum of $1,008 or something like that. But there's a pack out there where the $250,000, $500,000 funded easily. And there's an asymmetric war going on. Well, asymmetric wars can be won with intelligence, not by brute force, but by intelligence. And the community is basically educated people about what was going on. And that was it. I don't think that business is ever going to end up controlling a town's election again, not with that technique. Now, they may find somebody who's a spectacular person who, you know, they don't support fiscally that they could get in. But quite honestly, I think the town has got its own feet underneath it at this point. So
that's kind of my point on these notifications and what's going on now. And it's why I think mental health is going to become even a greater issue. Let's just go back the 80s and 90s. You had three TV stations, maybe four. So you had four editors there. You had some radio stations, maybe you had a dozen there. And then you had two or three newspapers. And then you'd have the editor that would decide what's going on. Now, AI is the new editor, and the different types of media that are out there. If you want to find something, if you want confirmation bias, you got it. You want negativity bias, you know, you got it. And as these poor kids that are growing up in this, I don't know how they're going to snip when they started from day one getting manipulated, Jay. What can parents do?
It's going to be a very difficult circumstance. And it's not just the kids that are going to have difficulty with this. Open AI chatbot that can write your dissertation for you. You know, and I'm thinking, well, what kind of a crappy dissertation could that do? You know, oh my God, you know, will it be as bad as like Siri was when it came out? You know, yeah. How funky is this going to be? But Arnaud Delorme, who wrote EG Lab software, most of this, there's other people that contributed and everything, but he's a primary author of it. And he posed a question to the chatbot. You know, if I have an EG, how would I process it with the EG Lab? And it came back and told him step by step exactly how to, you know, import it and segment it into epochs, reject super bad epochs, open up the ICA, clean it, and how to save it as a different file name. Step by step, that this is what you had to do. And it's, you know, geez Louise, you could have probably gone online to YouTube and spend an hour and a half, maybe more, 90 minutes or so, going through a workshop, kind of step by stepping you through the software and whatnot. Here, chatbot spits it back fluently without having to say, just a minute, let me look it up, you know. So it's going to be really taxing for a university professor or a high school English instructor to be able to say, is this your work, little Johnny? this looks mighty good. Can you tell me what this says?
Yeah.
Just generally, what did you just turn in? How are you going to test to see if this one, you know, when I was young, it could be, did your mother type this? You know, you hand in something and the teacher thinks it's this like a head and shoulders above what you normally do. They got to wonder about it. It's going to be virtually impossible. In fact, the chatbot folks are trying to come up with some way to watermark their work, which would be probably beneficial.
Yeah.
But, you know, hackers, they'll figure a way to erase the watermark and move forward. That's world is full of clever folks.
Well, the whole point of doing that paper is to get the knowledge. And I think colleges are going to eventually evolve into institutions with just a bunch of proctors because, you know, information is decentralized now. So if you want to learn it, go learn it. Now, the business should be to prove that you know what it is.
Yeah.
I think that'll be something.
Yeah.
Jay,
there's, you know, as much as AI does, it still hasn't got EG figured out. You know, that they were all excited. I mean, every university's got an AI that they've got their own little algorithm that they've all tweaked around and
artifacts,
and they want to go for it. You know, well, there's no AI yet that has been trained with the universe of information that's needed for it to end up sorting everybody into different categories appropriately. You have to train it on data. Stanford got all excited, and Emmett Aitken, very famous at Stanford, said, oh boy, we've got 37,000 clients from the hospital here already digitized and accessible, and we're going to gobble that up with the AI and it'll train it. It'll spit out more knowledge. Well, what kind of data did the hospital have? Epilepsy and encephalopathy, the things that EEG is diagnostically good for. It didn't have autism and ADD and depression and OCD and schizophrenia and, you know, the kinds of psychiatric richness that populate the rest of the world, not just epilepsy and encephalopathies. So they quickly realized they couldn't do the project they wanted to do with the data that they had. They came to me asking for data, because they know I've got a lot. And I unfortunately had to tell them, you know, I'd be really happy to give you all this data. It'd be a fabulous data set for you, but the data is not mine. The data belongs to my clients and their patients. And I can't give that to you. There's, you know, what kind of person would I be if I violated the basic trust that their medical records were their sacred medical records and not going to be harvested in some fashion. So I did introduce him to a couple of my very large clients, and if they wanted to work out some way to notify and get permission and whatnot, that they could access lots of autism cases from one guy and other psychiatric from another guy and so forth. So I tried to help out, but I couldn't just do the data dump that they wanted. So unfortunately, it's hard to get that kind of data. I had my old skin version of intelligence, you know, the meat version of intelligence instead of the silicon version of it. And I exposed it to over 500,000 records, a wide variety of categories. And it's that knowledge base that gives me some insight into EEG. They would like to harvest that. I don't have like a USB port to jack in to download it, or I would, you know. They'll figure out access to more and more data over time, but don't hold your breath on EEG being figured out by AI anytime soon.
Jay, there's only two industries that calls their customers users: illegal drugs and software. I thought you'd get a kick out of that one. You've seen a gazillion brain scans, and you've matched it up with people having symptoms. The social dilemma offers a suggestion to parents for their kids to stay off of social media. In fact, the people that were interviewed on this, these are representatives from Google, Facebook, Pinterest. They don't let their own kids use this stuff. And what the scary part was, one guy from Pinterest said he knows what the manipulation is, and yet he still uses the product. So if the parents want their kids to be tech savvy, is there anything that they can do with neurofeedback to monitor their progress in their formative years, you know, going up till they leave the house, starting with a baseline, and they can see if, you know, something is going off course during their formative years and use neurofeedback to kind of correct it if they can't keep the kids away from the digital stuff?
You know, I don't know if you know Mari Swingle. Paul Swingle's a fairly well-known fatherly, grandfatherly figure in the field of neurofeedback. And his daughter actually has written books and does very good work on internet addiction. And I think that her writings in this area are well worth pursuing for a parent. And she would probably be a really delightful guest on the show. Yes. You know, I've known her for a long time. She's okay. She's a sweet lady, and quite conversant. I think she'd be more than happy to share some of her knowledge.
We'll point people to her writings, and I'm going to, as soon as we get done with this podcast, I'm going to shoot an email over there, see if I can find her.
It'd be good to see her again. It's you only get out periodically to see a bunch of people, and although I saw a whole bunch of her here in town recently, she was one I would notice at the national meetings.
Yeah.
A striking person, big red hair.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll reach out to her. So, social dilemma. I'd recommend people to watch it just so you can realize what's going on, so you can do your own snipping, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The more you see how you're manipulated, the easier it is for you to gain control over that manipulation and, you know, cut the connections or at least pull back. If they're jerking you one way and you don't necessarily want to go that way, you can, exert your own free will. Free will seems to be easy, choose what you want. But when they've dangled shiny objects to catch your attention, your free will is being manipulated in some ways as well. So if you want to really have free will, learn about what's being done to try to control you with, and the manipulations are basic deep psychology, and even people with degrees in psychology can be manipulated. So it's not easy to counter, but knowing it helps. So it's a good thing.
Especially
with to catch up on.
Yeah, especially with the politics. Do your own thinking, okay? I mean, politics has always been around, but people, because of the advertising, take it so serious now. It's really put a big wedge in between, you know, people, and it doesn't have to be that way. You can represent a side and hear other people's points if you think for yourself. So cut the strings.
The only real politics that's good politics is local politics. And
only if it affects you.
And you've got to know the person that's in the political spot locally before you ever need their assistance on something. You know, it's important to end up having connections to the local politicians and sometimes to the state and federal, depending upon where you are in life as to what kind of services you might need. But you need to know them. They need to know you before you need them.
Yeah,
you have to have that relationship already set.
And just be aware of the advertising. That's all. It's manipulation.
Yep.
Jake Unkleman, Social Dilemma. Great review overview.
Have a great evening.
Have a great holiday, Jay.
Yes, Festivus.
I won't see. The NeuroNoodle Podcast is supported by listeners and businesses just like you. Like our gold supporter, Applied Neuroscience, and our silver supporter, Mind Media. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neuroscience's NeuroGuide workshops in Madeira Beach, Florida. They're led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Earn up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Mind Media. Get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from mindmedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor caps is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit mindmedia.com now.